Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. This hour is sponsored by Tara Devlin, our good friend at RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Tara's message, if you're in New York City, see Tara in a comedy showcase at the Metropolitan Room at 34 West 22nd Street tomorrow at 7 p.m. Okay, you live in Metro New York, go see her. She will crack you up. I'm serious. Metropolitan Room, 34 West 22nd Street, tomorrow, 7 p.m. That's downtown Manhattan. And as always, she writes, join the class war resistance at RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Thanks, Tara. I know there are a lot of really serious things going on, but there are negotiations underway between lawyers for John Edwards, former Democratic vice presidential nominee Edwards, and another politician who had a child out of wedlock. Doesn't that sound quaint? A child out of wedlock. What did I hear today? heterosexual married couples are now in the minority. 48% in the U.S. In 1950, this little survey said it was 78% of people existed as heterosexual married couples. Now it's down to 48%. Now, if you add in couples who don't happen to be heterosexual and who are married probably would tip it back up over 50. If you really want to get serious about having more people living in married relationships, just get rid of these dumbass laws that say gay folk can't write up a marriage contract. If you don't want them to come to your church because they're smarter than you are, okay. Oh, I'm getting off on a different tangent. Never mind. John Edwards is facing some federal campaign finance charges, or that he will soon face them. He hasn't been indicted yet. He said yesterday, his lawyers did, that he will vigorously fight any indictment. What the hell is going on here? I mean, this is insane. A federal grand jury in North Carolina has been examining Edwards' role in funneling money from political donors to Riel Hunter, the woman with whom he had a baby, in a possible attempt to cover up an extramarital affair. Well, just when you think North Carolina has turned a corner, something like this comes up. His lawyer, Gregory Craig, says, look, John Edwards has done some wrong in his life, and he knows it better than anyone. But he didn't break the law. The Justice Department has wasted millions of dollars and thousands of hours on a matter more appropriately a topic for the Federal Election Commission to consider, not a criminal court. Craig, the lawyer, added that, quote, the government's theory is wrong on the facts and wrong on the law. It is novel and untested. There is no civil or criminal precedent for such a prosecution. End quote. Now, we were talking last week about John Ensign, senator from, where's he from? Nevada? Nevada. John Ensign, who resigned one step ahead of the posse and may still be indicted. That was a little bit different. The case is different. This case, as the lawyers say, there's no precedence here. No precedent. Justice Department officials declined to comment on the possible charges, which were first reported by ABC News. Sources are saying that the outcome likely to be an indictment or an agreement, a plea agreement, on Edwards' part could be determined as soon as next week. So this federal investigation has been underway since at least early 2009, the Washington Post reports, when Edwards confirmed that political groups linked to him were among the potential targets of a probe into his finances. Sources familiar with the probe have said that investigators are focusing on whether money paid to Riel Hunter constituted campaign donations, since the funds helped the campaign by keeping the affair secret. What? So you see what I'm saying? If the funds were used to keep this married man's extramarital affair secret, then he's in trouble. If the funds weren't used to keep his extramarital affair secret, then he's not in trouble. What the hell is that? Now, what this pretty much explains to me is what somebody told me. I don't know. Was it, might have been Bruce Enberg, that when the when the Bush administration left office, they left literally hundreds of moles inside the Justice Department, Republican right-wingers. Now, remember, we talked about this towards the end of Bush's tenure as a war criminal running the United States. The war criminal had his people convert a lot of the jobs in the Justice Department to civil service jobs when they were, in fact, political appointments. By converting them to civil service jobs, it's almost impossible. You know, they talk about how all those dirty union people out there in Wisconsin. Oh, and by the way, did you hear about that today? Anyway, those dirty union people, you know, they got all this security. The Republicans have no problem because they're swine. In converting jobs to civil service, you think it's hard to, the unions, public unions, are a target of these right-wing bastards. And they want to try to pry the fingers of the unions open and take away everything they've worked for. Try prying loose somebody who has a civil service job. I mean, short of murder, it's very difficult. So anyway, what you have is a Justice Department. And a lot of people say, well, why is Obama allowing this to happen? I don't know if Obama's aware of it. And if he is, what's he going to do? Is he going to go to Eric Holder and say, whatever indictments come, don't let them come. Smash, quash the indictments, don't let the indictments come. Is he going to do that? Can you imagine? All of a sudden the birther thing would be off of off the minds of these rat bastard right wingers, and all of a sudden it would be, obstruction of justice! See, Obama doesn't dare do a thing. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying he doesn't dare do a thing. Eric Holder probably doesn't dare do a thing either. Now, it's up to Holder to make the final decision whether or not to prosecute. But the moles, the vermin, the scum that Bush Cheney left in the Justice Department will be there for a very long time. Now, not only are they there to harass and harangue Democrats any way they can, but they're also there that if the American public is stupid enough to allow, you notice I didn't say vote in, to allow a Republican to seize the executive branch of government, then these moles, these cockroaches, are there to undo everything that 50 years of civil rights legislation, 50 years of human rights legislation, all sorts of laws that have been done. The moles are in place. The cockroaches are there, ready to feast. In other words, we're in a pretty bad spot here. We'll be right back. Why should one be judged by the color of the
go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Hey, remember back during the 8 years that the war criminal George Bush and his war criminal handler, Dick Cheney, were funding their two criminal acts against, the first against Afghanistan, the second against Iraq. And remember how that funding was set up? It was called emergency funding. It was outside the budget, emergency funding. And the Bush crime family spent what? $800 billion, $1 trillion. $1 trillion was added to the debt that these filthy cockroach Republicans now scream about. $1 trillion added to the debt by declaring that the spending for Bush and Cheney's occupations and mass murder in Iraq and Afghanistan would be called emergency funding. Emergency funding. Remember? That's always what it was called, right? Well, guess what? The Republicans are trying to change the definition of emergency funding so that it does not include disaster aid. Now, I've been telling you the past couple of days about this filthy bastard Eric Cantor, number two in command until he slips the blade into John Boehner's ribs. Eric Cantor, trying his damnedest to deny aid to the flooded areas along the Mississippi River, the tornado victims in Joplin, Missouri, in St. Louis, in all over Oklahoma. Now, you can make the argument that the people suffering most from this are the people that sent these Republican cockroaches into office. And that's a good, solid argument. But is there never a time in this country? Well, the answer before you even ask the question is no, there isn't. Is there never a time in your heart or my heart or somebody's heart where politics can be set aside and we have people who have suffered the worst kinds of disasters imaginable, up to and including having their children be ripped to pieces by tornadoes, their families drowned in flooding, all of this going on in the so-called heartland, the red states, the Republican strongholds, the Christian fundamentalist rooting area. And they're just being slammed. And they're what these people thought were their champions in Congress, Republicans, are now cutting their throats, led by this murderous bastard Eric Cantor. No emergency funding unless they can cut the budget someplace else, dollar for dollar. And yet, when these bastards, including Democrats, because Democrats are cowards, when these bastards wanted to fund their death missions in Iraq and Afghanistan, they just simply called emergency funding and took the money. Disasters will no longer be considered emergencies if the right-wing cockroaches win a battle that's going on right now to redefine the way Congress funds aid packages for states and cities stricken by these disasters. Now, how does it work usually? The government, you know, the dirty, rotten, filthy, communist, socialist, rancid, liberal, Democrat, communist, Nazi, socialist, whatever the hell the current term is with the cockroaches tonight. The government has responded to disaster, you know, hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, fire, acts of terrorism, by using the power of the purse to aid the affected areas with emergency dollars that add to the debt because they don't count against annual spending caps. Now, as Jonathan Allen reported in the at Politico, when Hurricanes Katrina and Rita slammed into Louisiana and Mississippi in 2005, a vocal minority in the House called for offsetting tens of billions of dollars of spending with cuts to other programs. At the time, House Republican leaders told them to shut their mouths and sit down. But now, Well, now, while much of the southern and midwestern parts of the country have been hit by a series of catastrophic acts of nature, that vocal minority has become a controlling majority in the U.S. House. I just want to point this out to you people who insist on continuing to vote for Republicans. They will cut your goddamn heart out, your children's hearts, your spouse. They will take your jobs. They will laugh while you bleed. No emergency funding for you dumbasses who put them into office. What is wrong with you? Why do you do this? Why do you send people to Washington who think of you as dirt under their shoes, who now say, no, your entire life was wiped out, your spouse dead, two of your children, three of your grandchildren missing in the tornadoes, no goddamn money for you unless we can cut something. Let's see, what can we cut? I know, how about the Women's Infants Children Feeding Plan? Yeah, we'll do that.
It is an appalling dump heap, overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable, mangled up in tangled up knots. You nauseate me, Mr. Grinch, with a nauseous super nos.
Malloy. 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Tara Devlin, also known as Pterodactyl. She has a message. If you're in New York City tomorrow, she will be at a comedy showcase at the Metropolitan Room, which is at 34 West 22nd Street. That's tomorrow night, 7 p.m. And she adds, as always, join the class war resistance at RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. It's an excellent website. Check her out, Tara Devlin. And if you're in New York, go see her tomorrow night, 34 West 22nd Street, the Metropolitan Room, 7 p.m. tomorrow. Comedy that will make your nose bleed. Oh, by the way, Bruce lets me know here about the civil service, the embedding of these political appointees as civil servants. Bruce Prairie 2 writes, the practical way to get rid of political moles embedded in the government as a civil servant is to simply reorganize the agency to make the person redundant and then lay him off, or at least reassign all of them to the same office of nose-picking in Fairbanks, Alaska. This is why the Republicans have been holding up all of Obama's appointments so that this reorganization can't take place. I knew there had to be a reason. I didn't realize it was that. I thought it was just the prickishness of these cockroaches who hold up his appointments because they can. Ray Abelia, with Code Pink. She was the woman who unfurled the banner when another war criminal, Benjamin Netanyahu, was speaking before the U.S. Congress the other day, a joint session. And, of course, the members of Congress were jumping up and down. Uri Avnery, an Israeli peace activist, described it as watching yo-yos go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Standing ovations for Benjamin Netanyahu, as he very carefully and clearly explained to the American Congress that the American president can kiss his ass. Peace in the Middle East, it'll be on Netanyahu's terms, or there will be no peace. Ray Abelia, the woman who was tackled had to go to the hospital, and then was arrested for her exercising her right of freedom of speech, unfurling a banner. She has written an explanation, and I'm going to share it with you. Do you know that our Congress gave 29 standing ovations to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu when he spoke in the Capitol on Tuesday? I couldn't watch this hero's welcome for a man who supports the continued building of illegal settlements, won't lift the siege of Gaza, and refuses to negotiate with the new Palestinian unity government. During the talk, when Netanyahu was praising young people rising up for democracy in the Middle East, and I took my cue to stand up from my seat in the Capitol Gallery, unfurl a banner, and shout, no more occupation, stop Israeli war crimes, equal rights for Palestinians. Immediately, I was tackled, gagged, and violently shoved to the floor by other members of the audience, many of whom were still wearing their badges from the AIPAC conference this past weekend. Police dragged me out of the Capitol Gallery, and an ambulance whisked me to the hospital, where I was treated for neck and shoulder injuries and put under arrest for disrupting Congress. After I disrupted, Netanyahu said to his congressional audience, quote, "You can't have these protests in Tehran. This is real democracy." Is it? What kind of democracy do we live in when free speech is met with brutality and arrest? In a real democracy, our representatives would be looking out for our best interests, not the interests of a foreign government, i.e. Israel. I want my government to take an even-handed approach that respects the rights of both Israelis and Palestinians, but in our so-called democracy, special interest lobby groups like AIPAC have enormous power because of their ability to direct campaign contributions. So we have a very skewed policy that ignores the rights of the Palestinians, allows repeated Israeli violations of international law, sullies the U.S. reputation internationally, and gives $3 billion a year of our tax dollars to the Israel military when we need this money here at home. Before we go preaching democracy abroad, we should make our own democracy more responsive to the public good, not the wishes of wealthy lobbyists. On Monday night, May 23rd, five brave activists disrupted Netanyahu's speech at the AIPAC gala and also were met with assaults. The young women who had spoken out were subjected not only to assault, but to sexual groping by male AIPAC attendees. But these activists felt compelled to speak out against Netanyahu's claim that returning to the 1967 borders would be indefensible, his word, when it is Israeli policies that are really indefensible. Starving Gaza, occupying and stealing land, bulldozing homes, silencing dissent. The same day at a press conference at the National Press Club about military aid to Israel and the dangerous role of the Israeli lobby, activist Alison Weir had her phone slugged out of her hand by an angry Zionist. The sounds eerily similar to the alleged democracy in Israel, where Palestinians and Israelis are routinely assaulted, arrested, and jailed for speaking out against the Israeli occupation. For the Palestinian people who live under Israel's 44-year-old military occupation, violence dominates everyday life. Zinad Samouri of Gaza is a living testament to this oppressive reality. She lost 48 family members during Israel's December 2008 bombardment of Gaza. And hers became yet another tragic story in a long history of home demolitions, land confiscations, and systematic violation of the Palestinians' basic human rights. After the massacre of the Samouni family, Israeli soldiers left behind racist graffiti such as "Arabs need to die," and "One is down, 999,999 to go." Young Jews like me hear stories like Samouni's, and we see clearly that Israel's actions do not embody our deepest Jewish and humanistic values, which have taught us to love our neighbors and work for justice. We read in Torah, Leviticus 24:22, quote, "You shall have one standard for stranger and citizen alike," end quote. We also read in the Israeli equivalent of the Declaration of Independence, the Megillat HaAtzmaut, that, quote, the state of Israel will ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all its inhabitants, irrespective of religion, race, or sex, end quote. This rich and long Jewish commitment to social justice and equality bears no relation to Zinad Samouni's experience of living under a crippling blockade and losing her loved ones to a brutal military onslaught that made no distinction between civilians and combatants. It was this schism that we sought to expose during disruptions of Netanyahu's speeches at the AIPAC conference and in Congress. Some described our actions as rude and inappropriate. But after countless fruitless attempts to petition lawmakers through traditional channels, we felt the time was ripe for a nonviolent direct action that would speak truth to this head of state. Netanyahu is, after all, responsible for the violation of Palestinians' lives and human rights. My neck pain is a small price to pay compared with the sacrifices made by numerous Palestinian, Israeli, and international nonviolent protesters who've risked their bodies and lives to defend the basic human rights of the Palestinian people. For example, recently the Israeli army arrested brothers Bassem and Naji Tamimi, who have organized unarmed protests in the West Bank village of Nabi Salah. And they are currently imprisoned without trial. Israel sent Palestinian Abdallah Abu Rama to the town of Bilin, to prison for his role in organizing nonviolent protests against Israel's illegal land-confiscating wall. In March 2003, the Israeli army bulldozed 23-year-old American Rachel Corrie to death when she attempted to prevent the demolition of a Palestinian home in Gaza. In March 2009, the army shot 38-year-old Tristan Anderson of Oakland, California, who was participating in a nonviolent anti-wall demonstration in the West Bank with a high-velocity tear gas canister, causing a near-fatal head wound and brain injuries. These are only some of the most egregious and visible examples of the daily violence faced by Palestinians and their supporters in their struggle to uphold human rights and international law. There's more here. I'm going to share it with you after the break. This is not me speaking. This is a young Jewish activist, Ray Abelia, who tried to protest Netanyahu's filthy speech and the reaction of American members of Congress. And for doing that, she was attacked, hospitalized, and arrested. Before the hour, Ray Abelia is the national organizer of Code Pink, Women for Peace, member of the Jewish Voice for Peace. She lives in San Francisco, finishing up her description of what happened to her when she protested in the hallowed halls of the U.S. Congress against a speech by the war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu. She goes on. What's more, despite the growing nonviolent movement in the West Bank and Gaza and the recent Palestinian Unity Agreement, in his speech to Congress, Netanyahu made it clear that the Palestinians have no partner for peace, and Congress would back his outrageous claims. In referring to the occupied Palestinian territory of the West Bank, he said, quote, and you have to understand this, in Judea and Samaria, the Jewish people are not foreign occupiers, end quote. Someone should inform Mr. Netanyahu that his own Supreme Court has written that the West Bank is, quote, held in belligerent occupation. End quote. The worst part of Netanyahu's speech to Congress was not what he said. But the appalling spectacle of watching our elected officials who literally applauded this bald-faced lie about the West Bank and the other outrageous statements Netanyahu made. It occurred to me that right now, when it comes to this issue, our Congress is more an outpost of the Israeli Knesset than a representative body of the United States. With Obama and our Congress pandering to Netanyahu and AIPAC, what hope do we have? AIPAC, while claiming to represent the interests of both the United States and Israel, is mobilizing fear, escalating hate, and controlling our elected officials through enormous campaign contributions. President Obama, in his speech to AIPAC this past weekend, said, quote, "You also see our commitment to Israel's security in our steadfast opposition to any attempt to delegitimize the state of Israel," end quote. This reference to delegitimization is code for the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, a Palestinian-initiated effort to hold Israel accountable for its violations of international law. But the BDS movement is not delegitimizing Israel. Israeli policies, supported by AIPAC, that deprive Palestinians of basic human rights by stealing their land, demolishing their homes, stripping them of residency permits for Jerusalem, and that blockade and starve the entire population of the Gaza Strip, these are the things that delegitimize Israel. The boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement gives me hope about the future for Israelis and Palestinians. Our elected officials will not lead, they will not stand up to AIPAC, and they will not challenge these terrible Israeli government policies, so it is up to us to take the lead. By joining the BDS movement, whether it is Code Pink's own stolen beauty campaign against occupation profiteer Ahava Cosmetics, Jewish Voice for Peace's divestment campaign, the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation's many initiatives, or other campaigns that are happening in your community, you can take action to support human rights and a just peace for Palestinians. It is not every day that we have an opportunity to confront a war criminal like Netanyahu in person. But the boycott and divestment campaigns allows conscientious people to take a stand and to put our money where our values are, as was the case with the boycott and divestment from business cooperation, cooperating with apartheid South Africa, and the boycott of businesses in the Jim Crow South. Such campaigns provide an opportunity to those who profit from violence to turn aside, to nonviolently push for international law and accountability, and to follow the teachings of our faith, Judaism. And I predict that these campaigns will continue to grow and rack up further victories as long as entrenched injustices remain unaddressed. The outpouring of support I've been receiving from all over the world has been astounding. A woman in Iraq said that she was moved to tears seeing a Jewish American speaking out. A man in Gaza wished me a speedy recovery and quoted the civil rights song, "We Shall Overcome." I even got a message of gratitude from Brad Pitt. We have also had a great response to the protests, summit, and other creative actions we organized this weekend opposing AIPAC, the powerful Israel lobby that has a stranglehold on Congress. During Move Over AIPAC, our rally, we heard from excellent speakers. We coordinated a flash mob that's been seen by over 30,000 people on YouTube. We created a people-powered flotilla. We had a dialogue booth, a mock settlement expansion, and a street theater-style checkpoint. The creativity and dedication of this movement inspires me to believe that justice will prevail and is within our reach if we all work together. People are thrilled to see Americans standing up to our government's unconditional support for the crimes Israel commits with our tax dollars, and we have received hundreds of emails and calls from people in all corners of the world. My tradition teaches that, quote, "Justice, justice, you shall pursue," from Deuteronomy 16:20, and I will continue pursuing justice, and justice will eventually prevail. Israelis and Palestinians will one day live together in true equality. Ray Abalia is a national organizer with Code Pink, Women for Peace, and a member of Jewish Voice for Peace. She lives in San Francisco. You can reach her at Ray, R-A-E, at CodePink.org. Ray, R-A-E, at CodePink.org. It is very difficult. And thanks to Jan for sending that to me. It's very difficult to find people of conscience who speak out against any injustice, whether it's this one or some other injustice in this country. There's very few people, relatively speaking, who do that any longer. Code Pink happens to be one of the organizations that persists in seeking justice. We'll be back. Stay with us. The hour. This is a Malloy program. And again, I realize a lot of people may think I'm just focusing too much on this issue of the connections between the Likudniks in Israel and the Republicans and Democrats in this country. But I'm going to focus on a little bit longer in tonight's program anyway. It's just necessary to me, for me to do this. You know, I have watched for 25 years the treatment by one group of Semitic people against another group of Semitic people, treatment that constitutes war crimes. And that's as long as I have witnessed it. It has gone on for over 60 years. And nobody ever speaks out. You don't have to say nobody speaks out for the Palestinians. What you can say, if you have a little problem with that, nobody speaks out for justice. Except, obviously, some of the most vocal advocates of justice for the Palestinians are Jews. Why is that? American Jews, Israeli Jews, German Jews, British Jews. Why is that? Meanwhile, the Christians say nothing. Okay, there's a couple of exceptions. But the most vocal advocates of justice for the Palestinian people are Jews. Go figure that one. By the same token, those most quick to slap down or attempt to slap down anybody who speaks out in favor of justice, in support of justice where it concerns the Palestinians, the Israeli lobby in this country will attempt to destroy. Not silence, destroy. I have been the object of that attempt several times in the past, and it doesn't bother me so much on a personal level as it bothers me on a level that it's really shocking in that I have always advocated justice in the Middle East. Not ending the state of Israel. Not pushing the Jews into the sea. Not an attack by the Arab-speaking countries that surround Israel. None of that. It's always been, from my perspective, justice for the people who were pushed aside when, as Meir Kahane said in his book, They Must Go, the Jew came from Berlin and Haifa, from Brooklyn, from Johannesburg, and said to the Palestinian, get out of the way. Tony Kushner, I guess you know who he is. He is on the board of The Nation, but he is also a playwright. Some say he is the greatest playwright of his generation. Angels in America. And some of you may know what City University of New York, an institution that has provided opportunity and, as the nation says, scholarly refuge to generations of New Yorkers. At one time, City University of New York was tuition free. I don't think it is anymore. But a quick editorial in recent issue of The Nation. It took just 8 minutes of their May 2nd meeting for the Board of Trustees of CUNY to thoroughly and abjectly humiliate themselves. A good portion of the blame lands at the feet of Jeffrey Weisenfeld, the trustee who attempted to deny an honorary degree to esteemed playwright and Nation editorial board member Tony Kushner by grossly caricaturing his views on Israel and insulting him by calling him a Jewish anti-Semite. But the entire board shares some responsibility. As Weisenfeld used snippets of Kushner's words and guilt by association to defame him, not one trustee objected or reminded the board of the principle of academic freedom or wondered what one's view about Israel has to do with receiving an accolade from John Jay College. In the end, they expeditiously tabled discussion of Kushner's award, presumably hoping the mess would just go away. They were wrong. A righteous furor ensued, inspired by Kushner's angry and anguished letter to the board in his defense. Just days later, the executive committee unanimously voted to reverse course, bestowing on Kushner an honor he may or may not now accept. And now Weisenfeld is under pressure to resign. What lessons can be drawn from this debacle? The most obvious is that Weisenfeld picked on the wrong Jew. Kushner is a beloved figure, especially in New York, not only for his brilliant dramatic writing, but for the humane, empathetic approach he takes to all inquiries he undertakes, including the Israel-Palestine conflict. On that subject, Kushner has unequivocally said that the founding of Israel was based on the dispossession of Palestinians, which he has called the unignorable reality of ethnic cleansing. But Kushner has also consistently engaged the full human complexity of Israel's and Palestine's intertwined, vexed histories. He is less a campaigner than he is a philosopher, a teacher. Isn't that exactly the kind of person CUNY ought to celebrate? In Weisenfeld's opinion, apparently not. So there's a second lesson that goes beyond Kushner's particular case. In the past, Weisenfeld has abused his position as trustee to assault academics for their views on Israel. His crusade is part of a larger attempt to blacklist intellectuals and activists who dissent from the narrowest of pro-Israel lines. The goal here is not the shaming of any particular perspective. Kushner, for example, does not support a boycott of Israel. But to narrow the bounds of acceptable public discourse, to silence opinion, to squelch thought. How shameful it is, then, that a university as honorable as City University of New York colluded so thoughtlessly in such an endeavor. They wanted to give him an honorary degree, one of the colleges at CUNY, John Jay College. And a self-described Zionist on the board said no, simply because Tony Kushner has been an equal advocate of justice in the Middle East. And why do I keep talking about this? Because so many of the problems that we are facing right now outside of our borders, God knows we have enough inside, but outside of our borders is a result of the unequal criminal treatment that we have supported where it concerns Israel and the Palestinians. And as long as that continues, and it's probably going to continue for a very long time, the resolution of that problem will probably be more bloodshed. But as long as that problem continues, as long as the United States continues to unequivocally back Israel, no matter what Israel does, no matter how many UN resolutions it violates, no matter how many war crimes it commits, as long as we continue to do that, we are going to have a very, very large enemy globally.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
And I wanted to weep, and my eyes ache from trying. Oh, how will I ever be soon?
21 past the hour. All right, last one for tonight. This is an email from David in Kentucky. The subject line is Goyim, what Goyim? This is in reference to my use of that word the other night, in reference to Eric Cantor leading the charge to deny people in the Midwest who have suffered these horrible, horrible disasters any kind of financial assistance, unless Cantor and these cockroach Republicans can find some place to cut. And as I pointed out the other night, I don't hear Cantor talking about someplace to cut where it concerns the $3 billion a year that we give to Israel, or the $1 trillion we've spent in the past decade where it concerns the murder and occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan. You never hear about the cuts there, do you? No, you don't. And there's a reason for that. But anyway, David in Kentucky. Mike, I have fought the goy on the streets of long ago Brooklyn over issues great and small. For that matter, my late father was part of the first contingent of Eastern European Jews to attend Columbia University in the 30s. Many fistfights in the Union with Ivy Boys who didn't want them there. A few years later, they all were to learn what real anti-Semitism looks like. He's referring to Nazi Germany, of course. Needless to say, the college boys who survived celebrated many Memorial Days together up in the Brooklyn Heights as men. When they finally shot Osama. His possessions included his own videos, acres of porn, and Bonanza reruns. The Bonanza reruns was a thoroughly Borg TV show which starred four guys, three of whom were Jewish. The program portrayed the adventures of right-wing populist freewheeling, moralizing cattle ranchers who were able to borrow enough Eastern capital to leverage the purchase of one-third of Nevada. I can't believe this never occurred to bin Laden. I say all this to urge you to hang in there. As always, Dave in Kentucky. Oh, God. Yeah. It's just insane. Bin Laden sitting there looking at old Bonanza reruns. What do you think Lauren Green was? Irish? God. It's just madness, isn't it? Guess what happened in Vermont? The governor there, Peter Shumlin, today signed into law a bill establishing single-payer health care for the state. This makes Vermont the first state to do so. The governor lauded the legislation as, quote, an economic and fiscal imperative, end quote, as well as a moral one. He said in a statement this morning, quote, this law recognizes an economic and fiscal imperative that we must control the growth in health care costs that are putting families at economic risk and making it harder for small employers to do business. We have a moral imperative to fix this problem. With 47,000 Vermonters uninsured and another 150,000 underinsured and worried about how to afford keeping their families healthy, end quote. Vermont lawmakers passed the legislation back in March by a 92-49 margin. At the time that it was passed, the governor lauded the legislature for becoming the first state in the country to, in his words, quote, make the first substantive step to deliver a health care system where health care will be a right and not a privilege, end quote. Now, when this legislation is fully enacted, it'll guarantee every Vermont resident the right to enroll in a state-sponsored insurance plan called Green Mountain Care. The law is set to become operational in 2014. In the meantime, the legislation establishes a five-member board that will develop the healthcare system and ready it for implementation. The board also will be charged with figuring out how to pay for the plan and must submit an outline for doing so to the legislature for its approval by January 15, 2013. So Vermont takes the step. Vermont, and it's not a shock to realize that Vermont is the first state to take this step. Being in so many ways a progressive state, so Vermont becomes the willing experiment to see what happens, to try it, to make it available, something that Barack Obama didn't have the guts to do, something that the Democratic leadership ran away from. So let's watch and see how it works out, huh?
You think I'm tall, but that's the shoes upon my feet. Things don't come easy to me. The story of my life is mostly filled with Malloy.
25 before the hour, Governor Christie of New Jersey is another one of these Republicans who wants to kill you. He does. He wants to kill you. He wants to kill your children. He wants to kill your grandchildren, your nieces, your nephews. He wants to kill your mammy, your grandma, your auntie, everybody. He wants to kill them all. What? Well, according to Huffington Post, Christie announced today that New Jersey will withdraw from a 10-state regional greenhouse gas reduction program by the end of the year, saying the program is and raising his middle finger. Christie said, quote, the whole system is not working as it was intended to work. It's a failure, end quote. It's only been around for 2 or 3 years. The announcement thrilled conservatives who have been dogging governors in northeast states to abandon the effort to limit greenhouse gas emissions by having polluters pay for their fossil fuel output. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Christie wants you dead. He wants you to die. There'll be more money, I guess. Property, maybe? What? For him and his wealthy friends. Greenhouse gas emission attempt to limit the program. 10 states, regional. And Christie said, nah, I don't think so. And this son of a bitch is being seen as a presidential. Well, of course. Republicans want to see you die. They want to see people who have been slammed by tornadoes die. People who have had their homes, their farms wiped out by floods, drown, die. This is what Republicans do. An assemblyman in the New Jersey legislature, Democrat, who chairs the assembly's environment committee, said, quote, Governor Christie is one wrong-headed decision decimated New Jersey's clean air and energy advocacy. Sadly, this assemblyman said, this day will go down in history as the one in which New Jersey ceded its standing as a leader in environmental protection efforts, end quote. Well, Mr. Democrat in the assembly, I'm with you. I'm right there with you on what you said, but New Jersey, a leader in environment? The environmental protection effort? What? Though the state legislature in New Jersey is controlled by Democrats, the majority party may be powerless to stop the governor from carrying out the exit strategy because no legislation is needed for him to do so. Executive power. We're out of here. The business community, the rapists, the economic rapists are happy as hell. The people who want to assist Governor Christie in murdering as many New Jerseyites as possible are very happy. They'll make a lot of money, see? Now they won't have to clean up their messes. How come Republicans' mamas never taught them, clean up your goddamn mess? Why are you leaving it for somebody else? Nobody ever told them that. And since it costs money to clean up their filthy messes, let somebody else do it. Better yet, nobody do it. Kill the residents in New Jersey. Kill them. And in the process, kill the residents of Connecticut and New York, too. And Pennsylvania. Get some of them. Kill them. Make them choke to death. Give them lung cancer, emphysema, bladder cancer. Kill them. Pollute. Destroy. Bastards. Christie, who back in November raised questions about the causes of global warming, said Thursday that he believes climate change is real and caused at least partially by human activity. But die, New Jerseyites! Your governor wants you dead. And you know what? He'll get you dead, too. Besides New Jersey, participating states are Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New York, Rhode Island, and Vermont. But Governor Christie, this bloated bastard. Nah, we're pulling out, man. No, my Chamber of Commerce told me to pull out, and, you know, I want to be elected again, and, you know, I might be president someday, and, you know, so New Jerseyites, drop dead. Are you kidding me? Just drop dead, all right? Literally. Jesus, God. When talking about recess appointments, you know, the what every president has used, Obama has had to get key people appointed in the executive branch or the parts of government the executive branch controls, because Republicans, if Jesus Christ were nominated by Barack Obama to be the Secretary of Education, these pinheads would tell Jesus to go F himself. Barack Obama appointed you, Your Majesty? Oh, no. So state Senate, I should say, conservatives asked House Speaker John Boehner to try to block Obama from making any recess appointments for the remainder of his presidency. That would be for 5 years. In a letter, the group of 20 senators, again, according to Politico.com, implored Boehner to refuse to adopt any resolution that would allow the Senate to stand in recess for more than 3 days. Do you get it? Under the Constitution, neither chamber, the House nor the Senate, can adjourn for more than 3 days without the consent of the other chamber. I didn't know that. Did you? The Constitution does not, however, prescribe how many days the president must wait to make a recess appointment, but traditionally the chief executive refrains from making an appointment during a break of less than 4 days so that he avoids the perception that he wants to do an end run around the Senate confirmation process. So now the Republicans want to take that away, too. And what's Obama going to do? He'll probably sit back and say, well, you know, and the far-reaching consequences of this action, you know, the purpose of the Constitution. And yes, I do understand how everything has to work out in a manner that is adjustable to everything that we firmly believe in, where it concerns the proper edification of listening to the American people, where our main goal is to get the job done. And therefore, we really do believe that this process whereby recess appointments are made probably is should be scrutinized to a more full degree, where it concerns whether or not these recess appointments do meet the test of the U.S. Constitution and the Republicans. And have I said enough now? Can I shut up? Can I stop talking? I've given something else away to these cockroaches. May I stop? Yes, Mr. President, you may. Thank you. Thank you. The senators, in their whiny-ass plea to Boehner, wrote that Obama has appointed people in the past, quote, whose views are so outside the mainstream, end quote. So outside the mainstream? Who would that be? Elizabeth Warren? Who? But Obama, when he gets back from hanging out with the royalty, and he'll probably sit down and take a look at this and read the letter that these 20 cockroaches sent to their cockroach counterpart in the U.S. House, the very orange, very drunk John Boehner. And Obama will read the letter and he'll say, you know, they probably have a point. And then he'll get into an argument with himself. And then he will lose the argument with himself. And then he'll come out and make the speech I just alluded to and congratulate the Republicans for reaching across the aisle in their ongoing efforts at bipartisanship and healing the divisions in the country brought about by something. It wasn't the Bush administration. They were good people. They were, yes. Well, something untoward happened, and I'm not sure what it was. I am the president, but something happened. And nobody's response. I want to look forward, not backward. You know, I'm just a placeholder. My name is Barack Obama. I will enter the history books. But truth be told, I'm a placeholder, okay? So ease up on the pressure. I'll do whatever the Republicans want. We'll be back.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. You want some more evidence of why I call them cockroaches, these right-wing thugs? You know, one of the centerpieces of the lies that they used to get elected was no more earmarks. You know, those little things that the cockroaches insert into a bill. An insertion that has nothing to do with the bill, but it's an earmark. Okay, well, we need $13 million for a project back in the district. And rather than just try to get that sort of appropriation on a standalone bill, the members of Congress don't do that, Democrats as well as Republicans. What they do is slide this little thing. And they treat each other with great deference where it concerns this stuff. Very seldom does anybody ever complain because they know their turn will come when they will try to rip off the American taxpayer in order to satisfy some group back in the home district or the home state. Now, not all earmarks are bad. Let's clear that up right away. Only about 95% of them. They are designed to help the member of Congress get reelected.
Remember what I did for you a year ago? Well, you're going to vote for me again, aren't you?
Well, Claire McCaskill, Democrat of Missouri, member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, has pledged to keep all earmarks out of the Republican version of the Defense Authorization Act, over which she has some input. She sent a letter to Buck McKeon. The guy had so much trouble pronouncing his name. Buck McKeon, a Republican in California, the new chairman of the House Committee. And Senator McCaskill, the Democrat from Missouri, says that the proposed bill, this Defense Authorization Act, where hundreds of thousands of billions of dollars, with no cuts anyplace else, by the way, Eric Cantor, is reserved for the military-industrial complex. She claims that this bill, quote, has obviously been structured to circumvent the earmark ban adopted by the House of Representatives, end quote. Senator McCaskill then writes that if she can't keep those earmarks out of the bill, she'll make each one public. But this rat bastard, this Buck McKeon, this Republican from California, the cockroach, he's not going to have any of Senator McCaskill's scorn. Oh, no. A spokesman for him, some freak named Josh Hawley, wrote in an email to AOL Defense, which is where I got this article. Holly wrote, her letter is more politics than substance. Duh. And then he stuck his tongue out. Holly said, in the words of the former Armed Services Committee Chairman Ike Skelton, a Democrat of Missouri, we would encourage the good senator from the former chairman's home state to read the bill. All of the information which she claims was not provided to the public has been available on the committee's website. Okay. See, the son of a bitch doesn't deny the earmarks. Of course not. He says, you talk about reframing. Oh, my God. He said, well, please, Senator McCaskill, this information has been out there for the public to see. That's not what Senator McCaskill was talking about, is it? And this Holly Cockroach, a spokesman for the Buck McKeon Cockroach, says, all the information which she claims was not provided has been on the committee's website. In fact, this is the first time in decades that copies of the legislation were provided to the public ahead of the subcommittee and full committee markups. Decades? How long has the Armed Services Committees in the House and the Senate had websites? McCaskill said in her letter, quote, neither exact dollar amounts nor intended recipients of the earmarks can be clearly discerned. In other words, it doesn't make any difference what the cockroach said. Senator McCaskill is pointing out nobody knows where the money's going, but this is what Republicans do. They are lying sons of bitches, every single one of them. And they have this uncanny ability to reframe an issue that Senator McCaskill sees as an absolute, another absolute violation of what the cockroaches presented to the American public to get elected. Oh, we're going to get rid of earmarks, except for all these, the ones we want. You know, what do you want? Senator McCaskill went on to say, under the pre-moratorium rules, earmark requests were publicly posted and funded earmarks were listed in reports accompanying bills with the sponsor, the amount, and the intended recipient, all clearly detailed. Not anymore, said Senator McCaskill. How did the cockroach respond? The spokesman for Buck McKeon, the big cockroach, the little cockroach, said, it appears that Senator McCaskill was also unaware that all the amendments in which she has issues were adopted in a public session, the Armed Services Committee. Oh, a public session. Son of a bitch. I didn't know about that. Did you, Truth Seeker? Did you show up? Did you go to the public session? It was all there. The cockroach goes on. Additionally, every amendment that was considered by the committee were posted on our website within 24 hours of the conclusion of the full committee markup and made available to reporters at the time of the markup. Nyeh, 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 nyeh. Senator McCaskill, speaking over the cockroach, says the House committee, the one for whom the cockroach speaks, the House committee has proposed a billion-dollar slush fund called the Mission Force Enhancement Transfer Fund that would take money cut from other programs and consolidate it in the fund to pay for the wink-wink, nudge-nudge pet projects inserted into the House defense policy bill. And you can bet your ass that not one of those pet projects has anything with defending America. Amen and hallelujah. program tonight. You know, a couple of months back, I mentioned the case of Bishop Eddie Long, the minister of one of these mega churches here in Metro Atlanta. Thousands of members that have made Bishop Eddie Long extremely wealthy, very wealthy. Another thuggish Christian minister who does nothing but demonize gay folk. As a matter of fact, several months ago, maybe a year or two ago, Bishop Eddie Long, was in the front line of a protest, a march here in the Atlanta area, that was just basically anti-gay marriage, anti-gay human rights, pandering to his anti-gay congregation. I think his congregation is in the tens of thousands. Your guess is as good as mine as to how many of Bishop Eddie Long's congregation happen to be gay and are seeking from this charlatan, this phony, some kind of spiritual sustenance. Yeah, I know a lot of you right-wing Christians are unaware of this, but even some gay folk need a little bit of spiritual sustenance now and then, and for some unexplained reason, they turn to Christianity for that sustenance, a religion that the practitioners of which will tell you that gay folk are going to burn in hell. But working class Americans vote Republican, too. Anyway, back to Bishop Eddie Long, a real con artist if one ever existed. So in the midst of all his anti-gay rhetoric, you know where I'm going with this, four young men, one at a time, over the course of a week, went public with the fact that Bishop Eddie Long, on trips with these young men, individually or together, used his spiritual authority, I believe is the way the lawsuit read, to make sexual advances to these men. None of these are kids. These are all adults. Everybody here is an adult. Bishop Eddie Long is another horribly repressed gay man. The fact that he is a black man makes it even harder for Bishop Long, as far as he's concerned, to be honest with his congregants who provide him such a lavish lifestyle. If Bishop Eddie Long would just come out of the closet and say, look, I don't care what Malloy says with his filthy atheism, but I'm a man of God who happens to be gay. But he won't do that. So when the four young men went public with what they claim Bishop Eddie Long had gotten them involved in, and as far as anyone knows in this case, this was not consensual sex. This was somebody using their power, the power, to take advantage of these young men. You can accept that with however many grains of salt you want to. I frankly don't care. But what I do care about is Bishop Eddie Long that went on to address his congregation telling them that I will fight this. Satan will not take over this church. Do you hear me, church? And, you know, oh, my God, they all stood up, thousands of them, and applaud. Yes, get Satan out of the pews. Oh, chase Satan away from the sanctuary of our church, coming into our church, our new birth missionary Baptist church, inspiring these four young men to make such terrible claims against Bishop Eddie Long. Well, in the course of telling his congregants that it was Satan, not just normal sexual appetites. Yeah, even ministers. Yeah, even black ministers. Yeah, no matter how far you go on the down low, Bishop Eddie, those desires are still there, aren't they? And there's nothing wrong with them, Bishop. It's your goddamn religion that tells you there's something wrong with them. But I digress. So Bishop Eddie stands in front of his congregation over the next couple of Sundays and Tuesdays and Thursdays. They have a lot of church at the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church, you see. He stands in the pulpit and says, I will fight this. I will fight this. I will clear my reputation. Well, they worked an out-of-court settlement. There's not going to be any fight. What are you going to do, Bishop? You're going to fight it? So now it's in the news down here in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. They're reporting that a representative for New Birth Missionary Baptist Church expects that, quote, the lawsuits will be dismissed with prejudice by close of business tomorrow. Everybody is satisfied now. The four young men who sued, Maurice Robinson, Jamal Paris, Anthony Flagg, and Spencer Legrand, will not, according to the attorney for these four men, one B.J. Bernstein. Ms. Bernstein said that no one would be ever available for an interview on what happened in the closed-door session where the details were hammered out and Bishop Betty Long reached an agreement where it concerned the charges, civil charges, against him. But the person who wrote this article on yourblackworld.com, Dr. Boyce Watkins, professor at Syracuse University, his last paragraph, he says, let's be clear, settling a case does not imply guilt. But Bishop Long's promise to his congregation that the truth would eventually be exposed is contradicted heavily by the fact that he has shared nothing. If the members of the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church are so naive as to simply allow Bishop Long to quietly return to the pulpit, they do so at the risk of knowing that Satan's power has truly taken reign over their place of worship. Ooh. Let's be clear. Settling a case does not imply guilt. And two sentences later, Dr. Watkins says, they do so at the risk of knowing that Satan's power has truly taken reign over the place of worship. New Birth's congregation deserves to know the truth, and Bishop Eddie Long should be willing to provide it. No, Bishop Eddie Long will not do that, Dr. Watkins, for a very simple fact. Bishop Eddie Long subscribes to a religion that says sex is wrong. And once sex is broken down, which is ridiculous because you cannot break it down, but the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims have managed to do it. Yes, they have. They managed to do it. Their holy book even says that the first man gave birth to the first woman. And a bunch of other nonsense. But these three peoples of the book have convinced themselves that their God wants to see gay people, executed, ostracized, diminished, removed, ignored, subdued, subjugated. I mean, just on and on. And what Bishop Eddie Long could have been a force for rationality in a church, oh please. But he could have been where it concerns human sexuality. I'm a bishop, man. I mean, damn, I got a lot of income coming in here from these fools. And they would not continue to provide the money if I got honest about sexuality. Welcome back. Oh, no, 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 no. You don't have to play that. No, 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 no. The button didn't push. 21 past the hour. Maybe you can get rid of some of that music. We got two or three records going here. Thank you. There we go. Bishop Eddie Long. I just had to get that out of my system. I cannot handle that kind of hypocrisy. And again, Bishop Eddie Long, who also is in a heterosexual marriage and obviously enjoys sex outside of his marriage. Bishop Eddie had a chance to, of course, it would have ended his career. There's a lot of money in the Jesus business. There really is. But he had a chance to do something good for his congregation. He also had a chance to do something good, I might as well say it, for the black community. There is a special bigotry against gay folk in the black community. And part of that has to do with the, even within that community, the fear that some white racist or bigot will attribute that sexuality to, you know, gay sexuality, to further truth, or to further proof, I should say, that African-American males just can't control themselves. Right? You know how that goes. Or at least I do. I live here in the South. I've witnessed those kinds of accusations and conversations and so on and so forth. But Bishop Eddie had a chance, like so many of these people. Like, who was the white guy that, there's been so many, who present themselves as these religious authorities, and rather than deal in an honest, upfront way about their own sexuality, they continue to feed into the bigotry and the prejudice and the racism and the sexism and the uglyism and the nastyism of their congregations. I don't care if they're black or white. It doesn't make any difference. What a shame. What a shame that sexuality is divided along such, in some people's minds, such clear-cut lines. I would like to see the most ardent homophobe, who isn't a closeted gay man, the most ardent homophobe, let's say somebody, pick an age, 45, 40, 45, take this man and put him, through no fault of his own, on a desert island someplace. And this is your game, so you get to set up the rules. He's going to be there for 5, 6, 7 years. Now, he's not going to starve to death. There are no beasts that are going to get him. If he uses his head a little bit, he's going to... if he thinks a little bit, he's going to survive, you know, make a shelter. You saw that. What was that movie with Tom Hanks where he's on the island, the FedEx guy? Castaway, yeah. So if he's like Tom Hanks' character in Castaway, he'll be okay. The only problem is he's going to be out there by himself, pretty much. No sex, except the automatic kind. But now you drop into this little scenario, another male, about the same age. And make sure that both of your players in this little game are just normal, healthy people. You know, just, yeah. You drop one on one side of the island and the other on the other side of the island, and then the game begins. So eventually, they find each other. Oh, thank God! Somebody can talk. I'm not here by myself! Somebody can talk! How long before these two guys decide that there are certain, you know, urges, needs, necessities that just have to be satisfied, And their sexuality just emerges. And the fact that it becomes then labeled by people not on the island, but probably labeled by these two men as homosexuality. What are they going to do? Are they going to not appreciate their sexual nature for the time that they are stranded? As far as they know, they're going to be stranded there forever. You're the game master, so you know that, yeah, you know, I'm going to let them off the island in a few years. So what do you suppose would happen? And let's make sure that both of these men in their 40s are established homophobes. Nothing violent, nothing, you know. And they're right-wing Christians. Okay, maybe one's a Muslim and one's a Christian. All right, maybe one's a Jew and one's a, well, whatever. But, you know, they're religious. Oh, and the other thing that you do when you drop them on the island, no clothing. Ow! How long do you think it would take? We'll be right back. Before the hour. Excuse me. Phone calls. All right. Phil in San Diego. Hey, Phil. Yo, Phil. Do we have Phil? Phil? Okay, let me try again. Phil? Okay, we'll put Phil back on hold, and maybe we'll get Phil later. Where are we? Oh, yeah, the Patriot Act extension passes the Senate, which means it'll probably pass. Has it passed the House? I think it has both. No, not the House yet. The Senate voted 72-23 today to extend the so-called USA Patriot Act, the power to search records and conduct roving wiretaps with no warrants necessary. The Fourth Amendment now is entering its second decade of being murdered. It's gone. The right of people to be safe and secure in their homes, their persons, their private papers, no. Gone. It's over. So when you hear some left-wing talk show host talk about how this country is already taken about 3 of the 10 steps necessary to become a fascist dictatorship, and you think to yourself, not here, no, what the hell is he talking about, goddamn socialist? Just keep in mind, Sparky, that your Fourth Amendment no longer exists. It simply does not. Equal protection under the law says it does it. We can't have Fourth Amendment rights for this group and no Fourth Amendment rights for this group. Either you have it or you don't have it. It's gone. Facing a midnight deadline when 3 terror fighting tools would expire, the Senate struggled to find a way to stage a final vote in the face of continued resistance from a single senator, Republican freshman Rand Paul of Kentucky. Paul had an amendment out there which would restrict law enforcement from accessing firearm receipts. The great Ayn Rand libertarian. His only concern was firearms receipts. Oh, hell no. Hell no, right, Randall? Ah! We can have the USA Patriot Act where people have their phones tapped, their bank records looked at, their computers broken into, but you sorry cockroach bastard, the only thing you could come up with to try to stop this was an amendment saying, well, you can bust them on terrorism charges, but you can't look at the receipts where they bought their guns. You sick SOB. Jesus God. Woo! The roving wiretaps and access to business records. Access to business records? Oh, my. Are small parts of the USA Patriot Act that was enacted after the September 11th attacks in 2001. But unlike most of the act, which is permanent law, those provisions have to be renewed periodically because of concerns. Are you sitting down? Because of concerns that they could be used to violate privacy rights. That's like when you buy, you ever bought sleeping pills? I bought some Ambien one time and realized that I couldn't handle them. But on the label, it says, caution, these pills may cause drowsiness, right? So the roving wiretaps with no warrants, access to business records with no warrants, those have to be renewed periodically because, you know, they could be used to violate privacy rights. Aren't they designed to violate privacy rights? Jesus Christ. Ah! Ah! Rand Paul argued that in the rush to meet the terrorist threat in 2001, Congress enacted a Patriot Act that tramples on individual liberties. No. Really? Really? But the only thing, apparently, that Rand Paul wanted to amend in the bill was keeping the records of who bought what guns where really private. You know, no matter how anybody else identifies this country, Greg Palast nailed it. Armed madhouse. Armed madhouse. It's just shocking. Oh, by the way, the Defense Authorization Act that Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri says is being larded up with the very thing that these filthy cockroach Republicans said they wouldn't do, the so-called earmarks, and consequently she's going to expose it all. That defense authorization bill is brought to mind when one takes a look at a headline. 9 NATO service members were killed today in Afghanistan, including 7 U.S. soldiers, when a bomb exploded in a field where they were patrolling on foot. Seven U.S. troops. I wonder what their ages were. Well, the Times may have it tomorrow or Saturday. Names of the dead. PFC, and then the name, and then the age, 21, 24, 19, 26, 28. You didn't know that we're involved in a war in Afghanistan? Nobody ever talks about that, right? Nah, what? Afghanistan? Hell, we won in Iraq. We brought all the troops home a long time ago, didn't we? No? Seven American soldiers killed in this bombing. NATO said an 8th soldier also was killed, but his nationality was not immediately released. It was the deadliest day for coalition forces in Afghanistan since April 27th. When a veteran Afghan military pilot opened fire at Kabul airport and killed 8 U.S. troops and an American civilian contractor, 7 more Americans dead for no reason. How do you, if your family of these soldiers, how many of these soldiers had a 5-year-old, 6-year-old at home waiting for daddy to come home? And now he won't. Because, I mean, why are we there? Anybody got an answer? Any of you right-wing cockroaches, you listeners, you got an answer? Why are we there? To defend freedom? To bring democracy to a country that has been tribal for 3 millennia? And all of a sudden, we're going to stuff our asses in there and say, no, Alexander the Great couldn't do it, and Genghis Khan couldn't do it, and the British tried twice, and the Soviet Union couldn't do it, but we're going to. You know why? Because there's $1 trillion, best estimate, worth of minerals right under all these goddamn rocks. We want them. Oh, and the pipeline. Don't forget the pipeline. Seven more American soldiers blown to pieces. The geography of the explosion is made so clear. It says 2 Afghan policemen also died and 2 others were wounded in the explosion in the mountainous Shorabak district of Kandahar province, 12 miles or 19 kilometers from the Pakistan border, said General Abdul Razik, chief of the Afghan border police in the province. Razik said, quote, 2 months ago, we cleared this area of terrorists, but still they are active there, end quote. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the blast. We cleared the area of terrorists. That would be, I guess, people who live there, just like so many Palestinians who rebel against their occupation on what they consider to be their land are referred to as terrorists. The other side, whether it's in Israel-Palestine or Afghanistan, the other side is the side that's fighting for freedom, justice, dignity, truth, honesty, mother's milk, and stuff like that.
I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century.
Before the hour. Okay, let's see if we got Phil now. Phil in San Diego. Hey, Phil.
Okay, get me this time, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Fabulous. I'm sure the president of change, Obama, is going to come right out and say something about the renewal of the Patriot Act, huh?
He'll just sign it.
Yeah, I figured as much. I'm the Eddie Long guy. You know, I'm a gay male that was bashed by 3 kids. In 2000, they beat the hell out of me for no reason, you know. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jesus told them to do that. And I just wonder how many people, you know, in churches or these fake churches like this Eddie Long guy has, was influenced by this creep to go out and do the same thing to people. That's what really makes me sick about these religious freaks.
You know, it's always the subtext. I doubt if there are any sane preachers, and I use that word advisedly where it concerns religion, but I doubt if there are any sane preachers who stand in the pulpit and say, okay, when church is over, I want you all to go find a gay person, beat them up, because they are commit acts of abomination in the sight of God. They don't do it that way. They don't have to do it that way. What they do is lobby against the right of gay people to make a contract that has nothing to do with their damn church. It's a legal contract regarding marriage, and if the homophobic preacher doesn't want the marriage sanctified inside their church, fine. You know, it's a private, they don't have to. But to deny people equal protection under the law, is that Christian? Is that Jewish? Is that Muslim? Or is that fascism? I think it's fascism. So I don't see where anybody who claims to have some direct or indirect connection to like my friend Bob Alexander wrote the other night, there's only one religion. You know what the religion is? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Period. There's nothing else that's needed. Nothing.
And that's it, you know, and you're absolutely right, you know. The gay marriage thing is completely that. It's the right to purchase a license from a state. And how do you tell one group of people, you can buy the license, but you can't? It just totally disgusts me. And on the other topic you brought up this half hour, on the Afghanistan thing and Palestinians and everybody else being terrorists, you know, it's about time Americans realized that the United States, in the eyes of a lot of countries around the world, is a terrorist nation. I mean, for God's sake. What did we do in Iraq? We terrorized them when we shocked and awed them in Baghdad.
No? Right. Well, you know, in the eyes of the world, Phil, in so many parts of the world, we're seen as an out-of-control, drunk, murderous entity that does anything it wants to, that has as part of its official policy the right to preemptively invade any country that we choose to label as a terrorist state or a state harboring terrorists. The attack on Iraq, as you pointed out, of course, is a classic example. It is the same thing that Hitler did in Poland in 1939. The continuing murder of civilians using these instruments from hell, these drone aircraft, that to me is just an act of cowardice on a level that is just undefinable. To have somebody sitting in front of a computer screen 8,000 miles away working the coordinates of what appears to be somebody on the ground that they want to kill, and then to unleash hellfire missiles from this drone aircraft, if that is not an act of blatant cowardice of a kind that any member of the United States Armed Forces should be ashamed to sit there and pull a trigger on something that is going to unleash hell on people 8,000 miles away. What kind of an act of military bravery is that? Where does that fit in? What was it that Bill Maher said that caused him to lose his show on ABC after the September 11th, 2001 attack allowed to happen by the Bush crime family? What did Maher say when somebody referred to the bombers as cowards? What did Maher say? That's not an act of cowardice. An act of cowardice is, I forget what his example was, a sniper or something, but he said that's not an act of cowardice. Somebody sitting behind a desk pushing a button is an act of cowardice. No kidding! But what happened to Maher? ABC, which was originally set up as a CIA front organization, originally, fired him. Ah. I get very angry at the things that are done in my name because I'm an American citizen, or at least I am now an American citizen. So the government that says it operates in my best interest is a government that by definition, it's a terror organization. Not because somebody in some faraway land says, oh, you know, those Americans are terrorists. No, no, no. By definition, what is the definition of state terrorism? What is the definition? Locking up people without warrants, without charges, without legal representation, and torturing them? Well, that's probably one. Invading countries and butchering hundreds of thousands of civilians? Well, that's probably another one. Oh, but not here. I can't wait to see my inbox tomorrow. If you don't like this country, why don't you get your ass out? I'll come over there and kick your ass. Yeah. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
That's a great take.